while and listen.
Cowabunga!
It's good!
You did it. You ate that turkey and the pie and the stuffing and the corn bread and the cranberries. You did it. You ate it all. And you are here. You live to tell about it. And
eat it
listen.
All, and you might feel a little sick. And it's okay.
That's the American way, if I'm being honest. Eat it all and then feel sick.
Yeah.
You made it to listen to us blabber on. Colette and Matt have entered the chat, a member of the HyperX Podcast Network. I am Matt Silverman, of course, joined, as always, mostly as always, not every single time, but pretty much every time.
As much as I can possibly manage, yes, by Colette Bennett,
hey,
a person who loves video games.
Oh my gosh, she really loves them.
She
really does.
Video games.
What you up to there, friend?
Well, it's pre-Thanksgiving, of course. We have a pretty mellow holiday planned. So we are cooking and we just have like one or two people coming over, like straggler friends that are like, I don't have anything this year. Or, you know, my parents and I are, you know, estranged because they're terrible, you know, that kind of
right.
thing. So, yeah, you know, we're doing that thing, and it will probably involve a lot of chilling at our house, eating delicious food, and then probably just, I mean, playing games because
nice.
That's what I do.
Yep. Sounds like you are the Friendsgiving hosts. And is that like this year in particular, or are you generally the Friendsgiving hosters, cookers?
We kind of shuffle around, depending on what we're doing. Like we have two really good friends. One works in news and used to work at CNN with me. And she's still there, in fact. And, we usually try to figure out like, how to go about, like, should we come to your house? Should you come to my house? Like, you know, how does that all go? So this year.
But they're local enough. They're local to you where it's kind of like you'll trade off or whatever. And they're not traveling for family, it sounds like.
No, they are not. So, yeah, they are very local. They're like 10 minutes down the street. And yeah, this is kind of how we do it. So the woman of the couple is working. Later in the day, but we are feeding them before that, and we will have some nice company and some chill times.
Nice.
So I've come to the conclusion that I do not enjoy getting on an airplane, flying to New Orleans, dealing with traffic, dealing with travel. I love my family very much, but I just don't. The anxiety that it provokes in me is just so bad.
Yeah, that was my next question, is like, how often do you get back for these types of holidays? And maybe you're skipping that and going at different times, kind of thing?
That's exactly what I do.
That's
I go at different
good,
times.
Good plan.
And yeah, when it's not as stressful for me, I mean, I just, you know, I'm kind of at a point in my life where I'm like, you know, look, I don't want to spend time doing things that make me miserable.
Yep.
So, you know, what other things can I do? And, my family is cool with it. So, you know,
yeah, as long as the other parties are cool with it, then like time is time. If you spend a week with family in, you know, whatever, June, great. That's also great.
Right. Totally. Yeah. So that's what we do. What about you guys? What are you doing?
We are visiting with my wife's mom and her aunt, kind of ping pong the Thanksgiving cooking preparations. So this year is her aunt's year. So we are going out east on Long Island, like all the way out to the Hamptons. But it's not like the fancy, like you pass through the fancy Hamptons and then there's like the actual real regular people who live there. And so it's kind of like a backwoods country area. And she prepares the feast, and a good chunk of the family will be there, and the kids are excited to, you know, play board games and bounce around the house and sleep over. And yeah, we're leaving right after, basically right after we finish this recording. So peace out, world.
That's funny. Well, that sounds like that's a good time.
It shall be. But more importantly than giving thanks, we urgently need to talk about video games before the holiday commences. just apologies to listeners for all the time warp. Like, you're hearing this after Thanksgiving, but we are here right before Thanksgiving.
We are here before Thanksgiving. And so, yes, we're recording before we have to run off. Hence the reason why you're like, wait, when are they? Where in time are they?
Podcasters, the time travelers of our day. We asked you, our listening community, what y'all are playing this week, gear leading into the holiday week and weekend, because, you know, I think for some people, like you were saying, like, man, it is going to be a chill time and you're going to be loafing on the couch. And then for other folks, it's like, oh my God, get to the supermarket. I have no time for anything. And so we were curious, which one are you? And the answer to this question is a resounding Pokemon.
Yeah, I was just looking. I was like, ooh, did I miss anything? And yeah, most people are playing Pokemon, which I totally get why they want to play it, but I don't have any interest in playing it. I think I played, what was the last big entry before this one?
We're going to have all sorts of errors and stupid statements on this episode when we talk about Pokemon, because it's a major gap for us. But I'm going to say Sword and Shield.
Maybe.
Or
okay.
Was there another one since then?
Well,
sorry.
Let's do it this way. The major Pokemon title that came out before this one. So whatever, yep. Which one that was.
Whatever the mainline Pokemon for Switch before Scarlet and Violet. Maybe Sword and Shield, but probably something else.
But probably something else. So I bought that one because, yes. I got, when I played Pokemon Go, I was like, this is really fun. I've not really played Pokemon. Maybe I'll buy the next big entry. And so that one ended up being the entry I bought. And it was very pretty. And it was like, you know, Pokemon. Like it's
Sorry. Was it Arceus? Is that was the more recent open worldy one? Two, if I'm recalling.
Actually, no. You know what? I take it back. It was two back then.
Then probably Sword and Shield then, right?
Yeah. So I got it and I played it and it did not hold me. Mm-hmm. Like, of course it was pretty, but it didn't have that click for me, that, you know, fall into place puzzle piece feeling. So I think I played about 10 hours and then I was like, it's not bad, but I'm just not clicking. And so that was it. And I was like, I guess, you know, maybe Pokemon just isn't for me, and that's totally okay.
Yeah, my eternal question about this franchise, and it is a shame that we don't have anyone on our little team here to speak to it intelligently, is that I can't parse how much of it is like, I loved Pokemon so much as a kid, so now when I play the modern versions, I get those feelings. And not that it doesn't matter if it's good or bad, but like that it's enough to fill to click that puzzle piece into place.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think about this with Zelda. You know, it's like it's for a person who did not get into Zelda.
Right.
Excuse me. You know, you might be like, well, what happens in every Zelda? Like, doesn't Link just explore open country and eventually face off against Ganon and maybe talk to Zelda? Like, isn't that how it goes?
It's though, like, Breath of the Wild. I mean, Breath of the Wild was a revelation.
And totally.
I presume Breath of the Wild's success and praise comes from like, you have no experience with Zelda? Well, here's a great game mechanically and exploration. It's stunning and it's beautiful and the characters are amazing. Whereas I perceive Pokemon as like, yes, I want to collect all these new monsters because that's what I did in many other games.
Right, totally. And like, yeah, I get it. You know, it's like, okay, so, you know, this is the thing I look forward to every time. This is the thing, yes. That I, you know, I'm like, yay, like there's new monsters this time. Yay, my new starters. And like with Zelda, I kind of feel like it's, you know, oh, well, like where will it be? I mean, yes, it'll be in Hyrule, but how will Hyrule look this time? What will mm-hmm. be the story, you know, bits this time? So I kind of see it as like, I had the Zelda from the start feeling, and the people that love Pokemon, many of them probably had the Pokemon from the start.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And I totally get, if I was 5 years younger than I am, I would probably be a Pokemon fanatic, because you and I loved the RPG, the concurrent RPGs of the day. And while we were sort of leaning into the Final Fantasies and Chrono Triggers and those, and for me, especially like the CRPG computer PC games, the younger set was doing the same thing, but in a cutesy collect them all, get the monsters on game, you know, the Pokemon on Game Boy. And so I fully understand why Pokemon is gripping and has a hold on the culture and the fandom, and sure. then not being part of the fandom, then I'm like, okay, so this new game, which looks great and it's updated and it's Switch and it's got new Pokemon, is it meant to just scratch the exact itch that you had from all the other games, or is it meant to scratch the itch and push the genre franchise forward in some way? Meaning, Breath of the Wild was a Zelda exploration beat Ganon game, and also perhaps the best open world game ever made, you know, as of this record, you know what I mean? And so it pushed the franchise meaningfully forward. And every time I read a discussion or a review of the latest Pokemon game, it's like, yep, it's Pokemon again, and it's rough around the edges and not the greatest, you know, like, and I just don't know. I don't know if fans are happy or not with these mainline games.
Right.
They sell very well though, every right. single time. They never suffer on the sales front, it seems.
Yeah, no, I mean, it certainly seems like that is the case. So it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I hope that, and it seems like it from our Discord, that people who absolutely love it are having just a blast.
Totally, totally.
But yeah, for me, I am missing it.
Megalith in the Discord says, I wouldn't consider myself a diehard Pokemon fan. I've missed a few generations here and there, but I would put this one, Scarlet Violet, in the top five. So Megalith is saying Ruby, Diamond, Fire Red, Scarlet, which is this one, and Arceus, which was the most recent one. He's saying, I like how much they change. Okay, so he's answering a bit of our question. I'm gonna tag in a bit of Megalith's commentary here, because I think it fills in gaps that we don't have. I like how much they changed this generation. Open world, while imperfect, is fairly well done. I like that they give you three paths to go on. You're welcome to tackle things in any order. He says he's only four gyms in, but I like most of the new Pokemon, like the actual creatures. Other mechanics seem to be hit or miss. And then he's sort of summarizing by saying, we need, or he's saying, this one is a well-needed shakeup to the formula, but maybe doesn't go far enough. That, okay. Thank you, Megalith. That is a perfect summary of my general perception of the franchise, which is that the mainline games are mostly the same stuff, which I am not here to, I'm not, that's not a criticism at all. When a new Monster Hunter comes out, I just want to fight the same monsters. Mm-hmm. Over, like, I get it. But, you know, where's the game dev line between it's the Pokemon you know and love and we're shaking it up and changing some new stuff, but like, you can't change it too much, because like, the people who just want to cozy up with the game don't want to, you know, you don't want to necessarily turn your brain on and learn all new things and mechanics. I fully get it. Like, no criticism on that front. So perhaps it's walking the line as well as it should, this generation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's the thing. It's like, really, on one hand, you want to be like, well, don't make the same game. Okay. But on the other hand, it's like, well, you know, what did I love about the original Legend of Zelda? And I still love it to this day, right? You know, and one of the earliest open world exploration kind of vibes, you know, the setting, the characters, etc. So it's like, of course you don't want to make the same game, but I do think you have to balance really precariously between making the game enough like what people love about it to keep those elements, but then making it different enough so people aren't like, you just made the same game.
The DNA has to be in there.
Yeah, it really, really does, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think personally, like, that is a very challenging balancing act that developers probably have to go through on these big titles. And that's the reason why I'm not as quick to be like, it sucks. I like am no. you know, more often will be like, I didn't like it. But like just earlier, was it last week or maybe the weekend? I was watching a YouTube video where a guy who really, really liked, the name is escaping me. I'm going to have to type this, but it was a Silent Hill for Wii that shattered memories. Okay. And they decided they were going to try to do something a bit different. So it was kind of like a soft remake of the first Silent Hill, but they changed a lot of things. Like, you use the Wii remote as a flashlight and as a cell phone.
Oh, I've heard about this. Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is a cool concept. If it, I don't know if it was well implemented, but using motion controls as a flashlight sounds dope, especially you know, when you're like, whoa, what the fuck is that? Whoa,
yeah,
whoa.
Like, honestly, when I think back about it, I think it was incredibly smart, but like, they did some things that were very, very different. They really did try to break away in a lot of ways. So instead of the town being covered in fog, it was ice. And you didn't fight anything. You ran from everything, which is what I didn't like.
Okay.
I didn't like those particular sections, and that's why I didn't stick with it. But like, the game opens with like you meeting a, I think a psychiatrist, and like the answers that you give him like affect the way that the game is played and the game ends. It has quite a few endings.
Interesting.
Lots of like really interesting pieces of it. And fun fact that I learned, because I was like, man, that was really fascinating. And the guy that was talking about it, his name was Sam Barlow. And I'm like, he's a video game designer. Why do I know him?
Yeah, yeah.
He worked on a few Silent Hill games, and then he went and made his own company, and he made Her Story and Immortality.
And Immortality, which we were just talking about.
Which we were just talking Jeff about
last week.
But that was crazy, because I didn't know that he had, I didn't realize he had worked on Silent Hill games. And I was like, ah. And like, having played those, his games now, is his on the ones that he made specifically, and then going back and look, you know, reflecting on this game, I was thinking to myself, really, it's quite brave. Even though it didn't resonate with me, I thought it was really quite interesting what they tried to do, because it's probably the most adventurous and unique entry, like, that tried to vary on what Silent Hill was.
Yes.
You know? And so like, it was kind of cool because I was able to kind of go back on it and like reflect on it and kind of think back of like, you know, what I felt like was so interesting and so intelligent about it, even though it wasn't for me. So yeah. I think that, you know, like it going back and looking at that can be quite interesting and
yes.
kind of thinking and about how much bravery that takes for an established sure. franchise, you know.
The hindsight of that also is very critical. And I feel like we could even, with some homework, I think we could even devote an entire episode or conversation to it, because there are some franchises that innovate mechanically and it revolutionizes and the franchise and takes it to the next level. And there are some developers who take that sort of, as you were saying, that brave step to make a change, and it just doesn't click or it just doesn't yeah. hit. And kudos for the experimentation, but it doesn't do, it doesn't serve the franchise or do it justice, or it doesn't work out. I too find that very fascinating, how fine that line can be sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, you got to remember, like, you know, with the exception of, you know, some games that we have talked about on this show where we, you know, the Gilson B. Pontes games of the world, where we're like, man, wow, you were just literally trying to like just shit out the worst product possible. Most games have an enormous amount of work behind them. And I think it's really worthwhile to always remember that when you're looking at a game or you feel like, oh, it doesn't work, or it doesn't do this, or it doesn't do that. You know, it's like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I think of games as art, which is, you know, a long standing argument. But you know, I think it's, there's a difference between saying it didn't work for me and it's a piece of shit.
No doubt. Tagging on some other suggestions from the Discord, Honeybrew says, Warhammer 40K Darktide, but the beta, I don't believe this is out yet,
Okay.
And I followed up on this because, like, Warhammer's another, we're just talking about games we know nothing about. It's a huge gap for me personally, despite it, that whole universe. It's tabletop, it's RPG, it's tactics, but then there's also first person shooter. Like, there's a whole universe of lore and content and systems, and all of those things speak to me. Like, I feel like if I were to go into the rabbit hole, I would very much enjoy the Warhammer stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just never have, and it's a huge blind spot, so I don't really know what's going on. Honeybrew says it's a 40K style, like it's obviously in the 40K universe, but it's, this particular game is a Left 4 Dead style shooter. And he says, so far so good, really solid mechanically. I assume you don't have much background or knowledge about this either.
I mean, I only know that Warhammer is a very big deal to many people, but other than that, no. I do not know.
I like, you know, every now and then we'll pop into our local game store and it's just walls of miniatures, you know, and a lot of it's D&D, but there's a whole section for like Warhammer miniatures for the various tabletop games. And I'm like, yeah, this, I get it. I would love this if I had a shepherd to guide me into this world.
Right. Yes. Like Honeybro also paints because I am IRL friends with him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I have always been super fascinated with the idea of painting. And I also feel like if someone could shepherd me on that, I could probably be really into it because I love detail work. It's part of the reason I like really enjoy lettering and stuff like that. So I think that like with the right stuff, I would, but it's overwhelmed. You know, I think it hits my ADHD overwhelm. So I'm like, I don't know where to begin. I don't know where, you know, and like, totally. So then like, and then nothing happens.
Yeah. And this makes me actually think of two quick things, which I think are fun and fascinating. One is Moonbreaker, which was the new game from the developer of Subnautica, Unknown Worlds. Okay. Yeah. And this was the game, is the game where it's a digital tabletop game where you're playing with, you know, in-game miniatures and you're unlocking them or collecting them, but then you can customize and paint them in the program and then use your painted miniatures against other players. I guess sort of like, my perception of it is like a Magic the Gathering where you're like, you're deck building or you're collecting miniatures and using, you know, synergizing them in complex ways and then playing against other players for whatever gold experience, whatever the currency is.
Right.
And I love that. And I love this studio. Obviously, Subnautica was one of my favorite games. I haven't done it yet because the community has kind of been like, oh, it's a lot of microtransactions in here. It's a lot of, I don't know that it's pay to win, but it seems to be microtransaction heavy. Even while still in, you know, beta or early access. And so that kind of, it's not a deal breaker, but that early criticism was like, oh no. But anyway, I hope, I like to see this idea of like collect, like I don't want to collect physical stuff usually, but I like the idea of collecting, oh, now this cool miniature or card or whatever is in my digital possession and I can use it in the game and customize it. Like that's cool.
Right.
I'm into it.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's a cool idea. Like we have a few board games. My and I think I've said this on the show before, my best friend owns a tabletop/card/ like gaming shop.
Oh, and that's
she
great.
Also sells like Warhammer 40K stuff. But yeah. Like I've bought a few board games from her, and one trend I noticed in board games is that sometimes the figures will come just in their plain gray plastic for folks who want to paint. Mm-hmm. And you can actually like not only play your game but paint your figures. And so I have figures I could paint in the house. So it's something I do think about quite a bit.
So here's one more wrinkle on that, which I just freaking love this thing. It's called Hero Forge. Have you seen this site at all?
Uh-uh.
Okay. Heroforge.com. And then not like, it's not a plug or anything. It's just like, and I don't really know about the quality of it, but like, it's you in the web browser. It's this 3D digital editor where you just, and you could do it on your phone. It's an amazing interface. You open it up, you're creating a custom miniature. So you get a stock body, and then you can change. It's a human. It's an elf. It's a goblin. It's an orc. It's a whatever. Space creature or whatever. You can the amount of customization you can do, the head, the clothing, the arm pose, you know, it's what weapons is the character holding, what spells is it casting, what surface is it standing on, does it have a pet, you know, like you can, it's astounding how deep the customization of this engine goes. And then when you're done, you say, okay, and you check out, and they 3D print your exact model. Whoa. And then send it to you. And I believe you can get it, you can color it in the editor, and then it comes painted, or you can get it, like you were saying, gray and paint it yourself. I can't speak to the quality of like how the miniature, but I guess the point is like, hey, I can't wait for my D&D campaign with my buddies on next Saturday. What if I created my own character? Wow. And brought it to the table. I love messing around with it. And it's so like, you're like, oh, I could never create a dwarf with a Santa hat running.
Yep,
with
you can.
And it's like, nope, you totally
can.
They're
also not as expensive as I would have thought, because I pulled it up.
Yes,
you know,
yeah, like couple bucks, 20 bucks,
the plastic
30
ones
bucks.
Are not that expensive. And it's like, yes, okay, if you really want to, you can have bronze ones, but like,
yeah,
but like, you know,
I didn't
it's
even
just,
know that.
Yeah, they're $99.99. So it's like, okay, that's, you know, that's the expensive thing. But I mean, still in all, I think it's just kind of fascinating. I had no idea this even existed.
Play with it. Like, I've never ordered one, but like, it's just mess with it and see what you can create. And then like, try to hold yourself back from like, I need this guy. He's so cool. You know,
I think it's awesome. This is fucking cool.
If I played tabletop games with people on any regular basis, I would absolutely.
If you created a character, you could create your character as like closely as.
Yeah, right. You could make it like yourself, or you could make it like the perfect character for your campaign or whatever. So anyway, I just, you know.
Amazing.
The internet, man. It's
the internet.
It's pretty good.
We really need to just like cross stitch the internet, comma, man, like on a shirt, which I love to say. Like, you know, like if we had an official like Colette and Matt have entered the chat shirt, it would just say the internet, comma,
hey,
man. And then the back would say Colette and Matt have entered the chat.
Maybe that's the title of this episode as well. We'll see. I'm writing it down.
We do have a special number 100 episode coming up. Fairly soon.
Right.
Maybe we should just like make shirts or do something like that.
I'm not opposed to it. Well, you know, let us know in the, well, you know, this is not, you know, we're in a network now, we're running ads as you've heard. And, but like, this is not, you know, it's not a for-profit endeavor. We're keeping the lights on and paying our hosting costs and, you know, maybe buying Colette a new microphone plug because when hers shits the bed. But like, you know, this is a labor of love. But like, perhaps there is a dimension where, you know, if enough listeners care and subscribe and want to throw a buck on Patreon or buy a t-shirt, that maybe there's something there. So, you know, let us know if that is something that is of any interest to anyone. One more in the Discord, unless there's something you wanted to shout out, but I did want to touch on it. Alex Bebops says, Atari 50 year celebration. He says Atari is a big blank spot in my gaming history, so I'm excited to play some of these old classics while learning about the history behind them and the company. This is a collection that I am fascinated with and have been peeking at from afar. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a bunch of Atari games bundled together, but then also includes documentary films that I believe are exclusive to this collection with the game developers and the hardware manufacturers and the coders and whatever, talking about what they did and how they made the games and what the landscape was like, which is great. And the thing that I also appreciate about this software is that it's very slick. Like it's like you ever see like emulator front ends that are like really beautiful and you can like launch your Nintendo games and with all the box art and stuff. That's kind of what this looks like, but it's all custom.
Okay.
It's very, very pretty. And you know, Alex and I were talking about this a bit in the Discord, like as a little packaged museum on your Steam library or your Switch. Yeah, I think this is valuable and obviously very important. would I sit down and play Atari games for any length of time? I don't know. It's a blind spot for me, but anytime I touch one of these, it's like, right, okay, I will never play this again. Like,
right.
I don't know.
Right. Well, you know, I totally get that. And I'm more or less probably close to that same feel, but at the same time, I do understand sometimes that like people can definitely fall into a hole of like wanting to really, you know, experience that time period. And
yes.
And so, you know, I understand that some people are more capable of it than others. I am less capable unless it's a time period that I happen to discover certain games in.
Yeah. Well, that actually, I was thinking about that for you. Like, was it you who were, you were saying, oh yeah, my uncle had an Atari, so that was my first taste. And so does Atari 2600, 5200, do any of those consoles have any meaning for you from a games or childhood perspective, or not really?
Really the only old console that has major meaning to me is NES. So Atari and stuff, like we never even owned an Atari. My uncle did, and that's how I got to see it. But you know, I was single digits at that time. So.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So right. Yeah. I mean, it's just a little too early. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got my eye on this. I want to, maybe if this collection kind of like, it's on sale one day for super cheap, you know, on Switch, then maybe I'd snag it and just kind of like, you know, tinker around with it, show the kids weird asteroids and Pong and
right.
stuff
and they'll
like
be
that.
Like, Dad, this looks like shit. And then you'll be like, oh.
Yeah. and they do curse all the time. They will tell you when it looks like shit. No, I'm just kidding.
I love it.
Thank you to our listening community. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. One last amazing thing. I can't overlook this. Oh, quickly. Jeff from our last episode, he's now a member of our Discord. Jeff says he is playing Pokemon Violet, God of War Ragnarok, backgammon, you know, the classic. And also continuing to play Pokemon Unite, which is the MOBA. Which I get it. It looks really good. I saw a kid playing it one time at a school function, and I was like, "Yeah, this looks good."
Yeah,
if I like Pokemon and MOBAs. but more importantly, Qpa has been attending Demo Splash, which I am not familiar with. This seems to be a conference or a festival of some sort for you know, games and software, and he says he brought my NES and SNES out of storage for the first time in years and basically like set it up for like 20 somethings, like, you know, quote unquote kids who are he's sharing pictures of these younger people playing like Super Mario Brothers and Legend of Zelda, Punch Out. And most interestingly, Qpa is saying that they all understand Mario 1, like they get it and they like it, even if they're not familiar with it. Like it makes sense to them and they're really drawn to it. But other games are sort of hit or miss. And then Qpa also brought out Mario Paint, which I fucking love Mario Paint. It, like, that's a landmark game for me personally. Mm-hmm. And these kids, 20-somethings, are like, what the fuck is this? You know, which I totally get, because it looks like, I imagine Mario Paint feels like caveman times in an era when you can do digital art with a free app on your phone that looks and operates 1,000 times better than Mario Paint ever did. But also Super Mario Brothers 1 remains just a unique masterpiece and masterclass in game design that can still be sort of accessible and readable to someone who's even like never even touched video games. And I found that really, that tracks with what I understand about the history of games and where we are in time and for space, sure, generationally. I don't know if you had any thoughts on any of that stuff. Did you play Mario Paint? Was that on your radar as a kid?
No, I missed it as a kid. Okay. So
I would have loved it.
I bet I would have. I really think I would have. But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it's, I feel like this is such a rich topic that could probably be an entire episode.
For sure.
But like, you know, I always wonder kind of idly about like the games that were so meaningful to us and how, because of the way they appear in our lives and at the time they appear in our lives, what meaning and inference we layer onto them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, so like you, for you or I, the Atari games might not have clicked, but you know, maybe a person just a little older than us, that might be their NES, their golden moment, you know.
But having the self-awareness to step away from your own nostalgia and say, and sort of as objectively as you can, say like, I loved and love Mario Paint, but totally understand why it does not make sense in 2022. Whereas somehow Super Mario Brothers 1, an 8-bit game with like 12 colors, still is like, yep. A 5-year-old is like, yeah, this is great. You know, yep. Like that distinction is interesting and important, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I do think Thank about you. These things quite a bit.
Right? I know. Well, so we'll be revisiting perhaps purposefully or tangentially in the future. But thank you to everyone for shouting out what you're currently playing. And special thanks to QPop for uploading those photos and sharing some of those details from Demo Splash. It looks like a really fun time. And so I hope QPop is having fun out there. What do you say we take a quick break and then we come back with some more Vidya games?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
For every episode of No More Whoppers that you listen to, we will send you a 25-cent coupon for participating Krogers. How many Krogers are participating? None, but you're still getting the coupon.
And it's like 25 cents in 1985 dollars.
Right, so today that's like
28 cents.
No More Whoppers. Take that to the bank and smoke it.
On the HyperX Podcast Network and nomorewhoppers.com.
If you're a shrewd shopper, it's about to be your favorite time of the year. HyperX will be running massive sales for the holiday season. Get up to 50% off some of our most popular products, like the Ultra Comfy Cloud 2 headset, the tough, responsive Alloy Origins mechanical keyboard, and the fan-favorite Quadcast USB microphone. Sales will be going on at all major e-tailers, but be sure to head to HyperX.com and sign up for the newsletter to get the scoop on the biggest deals. Happy holidays from HyperX.
We have returned, and it is time to discuss what you and I are cozying up to on this holiday week. So, I don't know. What do you got? Why don't you kick it off, and we'll go from there.
Well, I am at a stopping point for myself, I should say, not in general, but just for myself on Coral Island, because, And I think this is extremely interesting, and probably I bet our listeners have plenty of thoughts about this. So it's in early access, which I knew. There's warnings everywhere about that. And I kind of came to like the end of a section where I couldn't explore anymore because they had not made, the developers have not created the game past that point.
Yeah. And which is, it's not like, this house over here, one day it'll be a thing, but it's not really a thing. Go do something else. It's literally like brick wall, nothing more to do.
Right. Like, okay, just. Yeah, I don't think it's a spoiler, but, you know, much like Stardew, there's sections like mines and you can fish and all that. But then one thing that Coral Island added was that you can go diving and you can explore the seafloor. And I was like, well, that's real cool.
That's awesome.
So I spent a lot of time down there. And what happens down there is that you not only like clean trash and stuff and like catch fish and bugs, but you also like do this thing where you're searching to unlock these, like, I guess you'd call them like, you know, sacred like sculptures or something. And they are clearly there's a bigger story on the island because there's like these oil spills on the floor of the sea. And I don't know if this is going to end up becoming ecological or what, but anyway, so I'm down there, you know, cleaning away, having a good time. And then I knew from the Discord, their Discord, that there were merfolk, which I thought was cool, too. I was like, oh, sweet.
That's fun.
You know, there's a whole nother town down there.
That's cool.
I got up to the point to where I thought, like, I met two of them And then I was like, oh, so if I keep going, then I'm probably going to eventually end up in, you know, their world. And then I hit a point where it kind of looks like it might be like the entrance to.
I'm and sorry, you're like, saying, it sounds like you're saying that you wish that you were part of their world.
Oh, God. Yes.
Continue.
Part of your world. So I got there and I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, okay, wait, the doors don't open. And I have cleared all the, you know, I've opened all the temple areas or whatever you want to call them, the little sculptures. Like those are all open. Those are all done. Did I miss anything? This is actually when I joined the Discord. And so I went and read, and that's when I found out that there are certain points at which, like, this is where the development of the game is at right now. So right. For the C floor, that the point I got to was the stopping point. For relationships with townspeople, the stopping point is like 2 hearts. And I think you can get them up to like 10 or something. Oh, you know, just like you could in Stardew, right?
Sure, sure.
You have events like letters showing up in your mailbox and people showing up at your farm and things like that for the first year. But after the first year, the game would just repeat. So you could keep playing it and keep farming, but nothing else would happen as far as, and I didn't get to the stopping point of the mine. I don't think, I could have gone a little bit further there, but I kind of hit a point with, you know, the stopping point in the ocean where I was like, okay, I've played this a lot and I've really enjoyed it, but I kind of don't want to keep pushing until I push everything in it to the brick wall. I kind of want to just stop now. And I think maybe I'll just chill and see what happens. Like when they do their next releases, they have a roadmap, but they don't have a roadmap that says in January, 2023,
no dates. Yeah.
This will happen. You know what I mean?
So do you think that you will be sort of living life, and then you'll get a ping or a news update where it's like, okay, the next update is out. It has this and this and this. And then you're like, yeah, going back in. Or are you going to wait a year or something for them to like really flesh it out or really 1.0 it and then go back?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. Cause like it has that kind of fun groove that like Stardew did for me. So I do enjoy it. And there's so much more I could have done in the game, honestly. Like, let's just say I still wanted to spend time in there. I could continue to like grow crops, sell them, or, you know, do other things, farm out other stuff, you know, make jams, make artisanal goods, sell them. And I could earn enough money to decorate my house, because decorating your house is like a much more detailed process in this game. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, Stardew, there is a little that you can do, sure. But like, this is much more detailed.
More so, like, akin to Animal Crossing, where it's like blank slate, put the furniture anywhere.
Yes.
Love it.
So like you could do all of those types of things. And I've seen people like post some really fascinating photos. I could do of that, but I find that I just kind of don't feel like it. Like I'm kind of like, okay, I've sunk a lot of time in. And it did get me thinking too, which I find very interesting. And I know I've touched on the show before. I am a gamer who wants instructions. Like I want a linear experience to a certain degree. Now, if you give me the linear experience as like a guide, like a guiding light, but I can go do other things and I can come back to that at any time, I'm good.
Yes.
But if I hit a point where I'm like, I can't get any more story out of this, I'm just not going to keep going. I'm not. And so I thought that was really interesting to be reminded of that. And I was like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's just the kind of player I am.
But it sounds like there's a balance. You're seeking a balance. Coral Island and also Stardew has that balance where it is like, okay, here are the quests and here are the villagers' relationship. Like the pie is in front of you. You go get it, but also do whatever you want.
Right. Like one thing I realized as well in the middle of all this is that I enjoy accomplishing things in games. And I guess you could get really psychological and be like, well, is that a feeling of accomplishment that you should go and get in life? And I'm like, I mean, I do get it in life. You know, I just wrote a book, but like book. All right. But I do think, you know, that that is a part of what my ADHD brain does enjoy. I've definitely identified that it enjoys the kind of relaxing yet consistent groove of always having lots of things to do in these types of games.
Like it's what makes games. It's what makes games games, and what makes video games in particular a special media. And and I understand what you mean with your particular neurodivergence, but I would also argue like human brains like to get stuff, accomplish stuff, numbers getting bigger. That's a great feeling, especially when it's grooving, like you're describing.
Absolutely. And so it is that, and I am, you know, definitely have enjoyed it to that point. But then another part of me was also like, you know what, this is good, because this is a place where I can kind of pause and I can pick up some of the other games that I have been wanting to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
So I did make time to do that. So I cracked open A Little to the Left, which
very nice.
Is interesting. It almost has, I tell you what, playing it, I've been like, this belongs on a phone. Not because it's not a good game, but because it is a game. Like, for instance, it is very much just like a puzzle game. It's straightforward. You arrange things level by level. There's no story or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then they have something that they call the Daily Tidy, I think, where like you can hop in and you can do a daily puzzle.
Interesting.
So for me, I feel like that type of game is like the type of game that I'll remember to go back to on my phone, or I want a notification that says, go do the Daily Tidy.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but like it doesn't have that because of the platform that it's on.
What are you on, Switch or Steam?
Switch. But I don't know what, you know, it is that they plan to do with it. So I don't want to make any assumptions there. But I think it is fun. It is very pretty. Like it's very well done. And I will go back and pick it up, but I have to be in a certain kind of mood where I'm like, okay, like, so, and it really made me think about unpacking it. It made me think about how the arranging is great, but the real symphony of it for me was the arranging and the story woven together to mean something.
Because
I always thought, well, what if I could just do puzzles like this? You know, what if I could just arrange stuff? And this kind of answered that question for me. Mm-hmm. If you're a person who gets a lot out of just the puzzling and nothing more, I think this would be, you know, a great game for you to pick up. It's well executed. It's pretty. It's clever.
Pretty cozy Sudoku is one thing, but an environmental, a world to quote unquote explore and derive story from that. I freaking love the word you said, symphony. That's just a goddamn perfect way to describe when mechanics, art, sound, story, and detail come together and make something beautiful, like unpacking. Yeah. Whereas A Little to the Left sounds like a lovely little puzzle game. Like
it is
not the same, not the same genre, perhaps, as unpacking.
Not,
as we
not
suspected.
The same. I mean, definitely the feeling of arranging has got some sameness to it, but how do I put this? It made me appreciate unpacking even more for how it, and you know, not being a game designer myself, I feel like it kind of puts me in, it's an interesting position where I kind of went, oh, this kind of like opens even more of the brilliance of what in my mind, like, you know, unpacking did so well. This is still a lovely game. Would still recommend it depending on the person. You know what I mean?
And it's not a criticism of this game, but I love that that the contrast allowed you to perceive a totally unrelated game
in a new light. I think that's awesome. So cool. And it's got like very mellow, very nice music. But like I guarantee you, if this game was a phone game, I would probably play it more.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
What do you perceive the daily puzzle? Like, do you think there's 365 puzzles and then it repeats? Or is this like a live service game where they're designing puzzles regularly and pushing them out? Like, what?
Very good question.
A lot
of
work.
That would be a lot. My assumption is that they probably they probably are repeating, like, you know, I don't know how many puzzles they made, but like they're repeating the puzzles, you know? So like, for instance, they just randomly give you a puzzle every day, but yeah, like yeah. at some point, if you played the game in a linear fashion, you would eventually see that puzzle. You know what I mean?
It makes perfect sense and leads me maybe to, you're sort of answering my next question, which is like, mechanically, could these puzzles be sort of procedurally generated of like, it's cups on a table and this week they're no. blue and next week they're blue and purple. I don't know. Something like that? Or they're handcrafted,
no,
basically.
No, because everything is handcrafted. Yeah,
that's what I assumed. But yes.
Yeah, no, everything looks like it's hand-drawn, actually. Like, every mm-hmm. piece of the art. The art's beautiful. Yeah. Anyway, that's my take.
Okay. Yeah. I was looking forward to hearing your take on this game, and it's not shocking. I guess I did sort of assume that it was like, it had a wisp of unpacking, but it really wasn't the same as that. And now you are confirming that, which is helpful.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, yeah, ADHD, God, my brain.
What game are you playing, ADHD? I mean,
I'm constantly Zelda. Every day of my life I'm playing the ADHD game, sadly. Yeah, but
you should get the battle pass though, because you'll really unlock a lot of better stuff.
Yes. Yeah, right, for real, it's always a battle. But yeah, so, and then the other quick mention I'll do is that after thinking about picking up the chant for a week, mm-hmm. I finally picked up the chant again mm-hmm. last night mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and I didn't play it for a super long time, maybe about an hour, but I did enjoy it. It definitely has, as I played more, I was like, you know, this has a little bit of like Resident Evil groove to it. You know, you see your character over the shoulder, but like, you know, they made some really interesting choices with the way you work with your skills and your powers. I think I mentioned those last week. You know, you collect things like lavender and ginger, and you have like a mind component, a body component, and a spirit component, and those mm-hmm. things all have to be like nourished separately. You can meditate to like gain back some of your mental clarity or like your mental energy bar. So they did some cool stuff with that. I got a little deeper enough to be like, wow, okay, we are going like straight Lovecraft here, like mm-hmm. all the way Lovecraft, which is totally fine with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than that, I don't really have a lot to say. I did die a lot and go, okay, got to try that part again. Okay. Got to try that part again. But you know, finally got to a boss and was like, okay, I'm fucking saving it right here. Like, I tried the boss once or twice and I was like, I will do this tomorrow.
Yeah. But it sounds like the difficulty and the dying was not frustrating. It was like, it was motivating, or it compelled you to be like, oh, I gotta think differently about this or that, and I'm gonna get back in there, kind of thing.
I think okay, so let's go back to ADHD for a second. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I don't know if this is something you have or not, but it took me a while to identify that I was starting to see in ADHD discussion circles that we can have very short patience, like almost none. Sure. And so I always thought I was just an impatient fuck, but then I realized mm-hmm. that in fact, this may have something to do with it. So I have very little patience for dying over and over. So mm-hmm. like, I'll get really frustrated really quickly and I'll be like, And I thought about turning the difficulty down because it was on regular and I thought, well, I could change it to easy. But then I was like, no, I kind of want a little challenge. If it got worse, where I was like replaying sections 10, 11, 12 times, maybe I'd turn it down. I don't know.
And the replay is not necessarily the issue. I think it's did I gain something? Did I learn something? You all died a fuck ton in Hades, but you played that for 500 hours. You know what I mean? Because there was progression. It was rewarding to die. So that's what I'm getting at, and what you're probably arriving at.
Rewarding to die, which is like a crazy thought to think about. You know what I mean?
When games were young, that sentence would be a strange thing. As games have matured, and we recognize that failure is frustrating.
Yeah.
I guess when games began, it was like, I guess they were more, they just felt like they were more analogous to sports of like, you lost. deal with it. You know, that was, and that was it. And now we know that, like, oh, if you want someone to play your game for 500 hours, you have to reward failure. Like, you, there has to be progress in failure. And that is a through line that is endlessly fascinating in the sort of ecosystem of game culture and development and player response, et cetera. Continue.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree with that. So yeah, will I be in the mood to, you know, go back and die some more today? I probably will at some point. It just depends on where I'm at. So that's what's going on in my gaming world right now. I'm of the things I'm enjoying the most. I mean, obviously from what I said, I'm definitely kind of at a point where I'm like, I'm not sure any of these are perfectly scratching the itch right now because of certain changes with each one.
Exactly. You have just petered out on three games. Coral Island in development. So you're at a wall, mostly there. Little to the left is lovely, but not necessarily what you were looking for. And there's a difficulty spike in the chant. You're ready. Well, here's the thing. You went to sleep and now here you are today and you're going to go into the boss fight and it'll be one of those like, oh, this was so easy. Like, I got it. My brain's got it.
Yeah.
If it's not, then perhaps you need something. You need something new for Thanksgiving.
Maybe. And I mean, look, my desk is like, I'm sitting here doing the podcast and I'm looking at easily a dozen demos or games that I have yet to play that I've been like, you know, meaning to play. So, I mean, at any time I could fire up one of these games. So, you know, it's not like I have any shortage. It's just that, well, the shortage I actually have is time. Like I never have time.
And attention in that way of like, just because you have 50 demos doesn't mean any of them will be good or right for the moment.
Unfortunately, you are correct.
Well, best of luck to you. You're at a precipice, but in conclusion here, perhaps every time you talk about Coral Island, I'm like, I definitely want to play this, but I definitely will wait for late early access or 1.0. Have they added controller support yet? I think I keep asking you this.
No, and they keep saying that it's like high on their list, but it's not there yet. That's another thing that I think I'll really enjoy. Like, this would be, in my opinion, a really great Switch game. Or,
absolutely.
I mean, you know, even on your Steam Deck, but, you know, you need to be able to use the controller.
For sure.
So I would love if when I came back, that was an option. So we'll see.
It's one of those games that it's like, oh, okay, another Stardew. That's cute. And then my mind is like, well, whatever, I'll skip that. But then hearing you talk about it more and more, I'm very committed to trying this game, but I will wait, as we were saying. So so thank you for that. I'm excited one day to follow the progress here and also see if you like keep up with it or if you're going to wait. So please keep us posted on that.
I shall.
Let's take another short break and we'll be back to talk about more Vidya games or right after this.
Hi, it's me, Jeremy Parrish, co-host of the Retronauts podcast, the only video game history podcast that's been around so long, it's also a part of video game history. Every week, one of the motley rabble who hosts this show leads a deep dive into the past, whether it's to break down a classic franchise, learn more about a timeless game from its creator, or just wallow in nostalgia. Relive history with Retronauts here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Hey there, friends. It's Matt. I'm here to tell you that it's that time of year again, and I don't care what you say. There's nothing I can do about time. Holiday shopping time, and if you want to get ahead of the curve, HyperX will be running big sales for the holiday season. That's up to 50% off, 50%. Of the big product lines, including the ultra comfy Cloud 2 headset, the Alloy Origins mechanical keyboard, if you're into those fancy keyboards, and the fan favorite, the Quadcast USB microphone, if you're recording podcasts. That's up to 50% off on some gifts for the gaming enthusiast or the podcaster or the technology enthusiast in your life. And maybe throw something in the cart for yourself. Any major retailer or e-tailer where you typically get your favorite gear, will have these sales. And you can also head over to HyperX.com and sign up for the newsletter so you can be alerted for the biggest deals right away. Happy holidays from us, and thank you to HyperX for supporting the show. We have returned, and I have a quick, update or tag onto what I was playing last week. And then I am excited to share another little gem with you and our listening audience. I'm continuing to play and love Tactics Ogre Reborn on the Switch. Yay. And you know, I sussed it out mostly last week talking with you and Jeff. I'm trying to put my finger on some of the mechanical reasons why I really think this game is great and special and unique. And over the week I was like playing it more. I was like, oh, I forgot to talk about this. I forgot to talk about that. And now like most of those things are escaping me. So this is, you know, I'll be brief, but like, it's not just the tactical it's tactical combat over and over and over again. So like, you have to love that to love this game, but it really is about the forward incremental progress of like, hey, I'm up against this new faction and they're chasing me down. And like, but they have this unit that I've never seen before. They have these like lizard men, and it's like, oh, those guys are cool. They have cool moves. And what is fun about this game is like, if you have a particular character or class in your battle party and you deploy them on the field and you equip them with a certain skill. I think for reptiles, it's like a wizard class can use a skill called coax, which is a way to recruit a reptile class. So it's like, okay, I snoop out the battlefield. There's reptile dudes on the battlefield. I want one of those guys in my party. I want to recruit one. I deploy a wizard with the applicable skill. Then I have to fight the reptile guy down to very, very low hit points. And that particular character on the battlefield needs to be sort of amenable to recruitment. And by that, I mean like, there are certain descriptors when you sort of hover over their name that's like, this character has allegiance to the enemy, but when you approach them, they kind of like look at you with deference. Or so. And it's like there's little clues that are like, okay, if I weaken this guy all the way down and then bring my particular class next to him and I don't kill him, I use this special skill in the moment, then maybe I'll have like a 28% chance to recruit him. And you use the skill and it's like, okay, and dice roll and oh, didn't get it. And so you're trying. So as you're fighting this like larger battle, trying not to die, trying not to lose your troops, trying to achieve the core victory, which is to like usually to defeat the leader of the enemies. You don't have to kill everyone. You just have to defeat the leader and they will back off. I'm also doing this sort of sub game of like, this reptile guy, this dragon, this griffin, this fairy is super cool, has cool abilities. I want them. So mm-hmm. I'm trying not to kill them. I'm trying to bring them on my team. And then there's this added wrinkle of like, there are some characters in your party for story reasons who are like guests of your party. Mm-hmm. So you do not control them directly. They act independently. So sometimes they will just fucking straight up kill the units you're trying to recruit and you're like, fuck, and you have to like rewind or try to recruit a different character. So and so that complexity sounds like a lot, but the reason it's really fun is that when you finally get them, you're like, yeah, and then you have a new teammate, and then that unlocks like, whoa, this fairy has all these different skills and uses all this different equipment, and you can then turn that fairy creature character into a warrior, into an archer, into a magician. You know, like, and so it just has this, for a game that's from 1995, it just has this very sprawling, deep system of recruitment, class, skill, equipment,
level up, party level, etc. And all these things are very synergistic to the point where, you know, you are in between battles, you are spending a lot of time in menus, sort of, you know, min-maxing or specializing your characters in very specific ways that I know that sounds boring and lame, but I love that.
No, I mean, you know, I don't think it does because I mean, I think that, you know, min-maxing is a thing that, you know, people deeply love to do. So, I mean, I don't think that's that weird actually.
And maybe it's min-maxing or maybe it's specializing or customizing in ways that make sense for your team. And I suppose there are probably like, you know, there's like an element layer, which I don't even fully understand because like all the people can use the different spells depending on their class. So I don't really know the element system yet, but it's just like, if I put this Beastmaster on the board, then he can recruit dragons, while if I put this cleric on the board, she can heal these characters, while this enchantress can also like deal magic damage from far. It's, and I think I said this last time, it's like the big army that I will end up with at the end of the game is going to be radically different from any other player because of how you're sort of progressing in the story.
Right.
So it's just, and the story continues to be good. There's a lot of great, like, just good old fashioned twists and turns. Like, this person who was good is actually bad, and you thought you were fighting for this, but it's actually that. And it's, you know, it's not Shakespeare, but it's good meat and potatoes, cliffhangers, twists and turns, backstabbing, you know, who's who has allegiance to whom. It's great. It's just great. I love it. So I'll leave it there. Because I'm so excited to introduce you and these beautiful listeners to the strange hellscape that is Wobble Dogs.
Oh my God.
We briefly touched on Wobble Dogs during the November Nindies Direct, where they were like, check out all these games.
I remember it. I remember all of this. Yes.
And this game has been on Steam with very positive reviews for a year, 2 years maybe. So like I had never heard of this. And like, you know, you and I consider ourselves sort of in the know connoisseurs of various games, especially in genres that we care about. So like a weird pet simulator that's very popular on Steam or very like, you know, appreciated on Steam. Like, I feel like that would have crossed my radar at some point, but it wasn't until a Nintendo Direct that it's like, and Wobble Dogs. Okay. On to the next one. I'm like, what's that? What is that weird game? I need it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I showed it to my daughter. She's like, download this now.
Now
I need it. So it came out last week or so, like last Thursday. We're not very far along, but I will describe it as best I can. It's like it's a 3D, like imagine like what 90s VR looked like, you know, with like grids and boxes and low poly, whatever. It's obviously not a VR game, but like I think I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it's a very low poly, janky looking, 90s looking 3D. Like think of the very first 3D games on PC or Nintendo 64, and that's kind of like what this looks like. And the game is a sandbox where you care for and breed these wobbly, weird, rectangular dogs that just kind of like bop around in your 3D space, and you can pet them. You have food machines that dispense various types of food, and then they gestate. They pupate. So you have a dog that's like it's an adolescent dog, and it's bopping around and it's eating stuff. And then all of a sudden it's like, Bloopy wants to pupate. And then you're like, okay, great. And you click on him and then he goes into a cocoon.
Does it say pupate? Is that the word it uses?
Oh, okay. I'm using all the scientific terms, okay? I would not mince words with this this very particular game. What was it? I'm trying to think. It was like Mini or whatever. That you get names for the dogs, but you can change them. So you can make them your own, which is lovely. But like Mini wants to pupate. So you click on Mini, and then she goes into a cocoon, and then the cocoon zips up on a spider web to the ceiling, and then a little timer ticks down where she is just pupating inside a cocoon, and then you hatch her out of the cocoon and she plops back down to the ground, and then the sort of adolescent Mini has become young adult Mini, and she's a little bigger and her legs are longer and she's moving around a little bit better, and so she's bopping around whatever. And as you're going, you're sort of, you know, the dog is like pooping and eating and doing different and playing, and you unlock little toys and whatever. And as you're going, eventually, you know, the dog will lay an egg, and you're like, okay, cool.
Okay.
All right. This is an egg, a dog egg. So I'm going to hang on to this and whatever. But you can't just hatch a new dog out of that egg. You have to fertilize the egg. So eventually, through various mechanics, you get additional dogs, and you have to grow them to maturity. You cannot breed an adult dog with a child dog. That would be a crime, of course. So you have to wait until they're both adults, and then you sort of put them in this virtual DNA splicer. And in that zone, there's a couple things going on. One, the foods that you feed or really make available to the dogs indicate they influence the dog's like gut biome. This is not how evolution or genetics works, obviously. None of this is scientific in the real world, but in Wobble Dog's world, the things that they eat affect their DNA. And so if you sort of say, all right, Mini, you eat a hamburger and a chicken nugget and your own poop, thank you. And then Bilbo, my daughter is reading The Lord of the Rings. So Bilbo is going to eat freeze-dried ice cream. And I'm trying to think of all the other stupid foods. There's all different food dispensers that dispense weird stuff. There's like a space food and an alien food dispenser.
Okay.
And then once they both reach adulthood, you go into this like breeding simulation where you combine the DNA of the two and you get like a litter of puppies. And they start to have genetic variation based on the foods that they have eaten. And then you can pick, it's like a layered simulation where you can then say, oh, I want this one, and you can pick it. Or you can say, no, none of these are quite right. Let me breed two of the offspring together, simulate their breeding, and get another batch of puppies so that I can get more variation. And so I think what it is like you're trying to isolate certain genetic variables to get the weird dog you want. Maybe you want one with super long legs, or maybe you want one with orange fur instead of pink fur. And so you breed. And I think there's like a simulation stability. So you can only breed so many times until you have to pick one. And then you pick one, and then it fertilizes the egg. Then you pop the egg out of the egg dispenser, and then you get a new puppy, a new wobble dog that is a juvenile, but it has genetic variation, and now they're in your little pen. Meanwhile, the dogs, you can sort of tell them to eat stuff. You can tell them to play. You can tell them to dig holes. But if you leave them alone, they will do their own thing. They will dig up stuff. They will sort of like dig up little capsules where you can get new furniture so you can decorate your little dog zone or whatever. They will create they create a burrow, which they then go into and do stuff in the burrow that has ramifications for the gameplay. But there's basically like a 10-minute tutorial. It's like, here's how you do food, and here's how you feed them, and then you can pet them, and then you can breed them, and there's lots more to do, so figure it out. And then they just let you go. And then the core mechanic of the game is just like, wait for weird stuff to happen, and then you get new weird stuff, and you're like, what does this do? And then it's like, whoa, that's the thing? Whoa, that's weird. And it's super weird. My daughter's playing her own game. I'm playing my game, and I'm finding it interesting that, like, I'm breeding my dogs and they all look the same. I don't fully understand the breeding mechanic, and I'm like, this sucks. Like, I don't understand how to get cool new dogs. I don't know what to do because they all literally look the same to me. But her game, she's breeding them and she's starting to get meaningful variation. I'm like, okay, you must be feeding them or isolating them or something to get the breeding done. And it's not really in a weird way, I'm trying not to spoil it because she's playing and she's like, I don't know what to do. Like, nothing's happening. I'm like, I don't think you do anything. I think you just wait for weird stuff to happen. And then new mechanics will present themselves.
Right.
And that's as far as we've gotten. It runs like shit on Switch. And in a weird way, that's okay because it's so weird and janky. It's also got a bunch of bugs on Switch. Like, the left stick will just stop working and I have to like restart the game for it to like happen again. The camera movement is very strange with the controller. Like, it takes a lot of getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if you're looking for a weird ass, janky ass, like, pet simulator where you really this is actually what I want to talk about too. It's not really a spoiler because it happens pretty early on, but one of the examples of like, what do I do next? I don't know what to do. You just play and play, and then all of a sudden it's like, Minnie, your first dog is getting ready for the end of her life, so you can go, you can zoom in on her and check her out and check out what she's up to, or you can dismiss this message and do whatever. And so you like pop over, you give her some pets, and it's kind of like, all right, now it's time for Minnie to die. And then she dies, and then it's like, okay. And then she dies and flops over and like kind of busts into a million pieces. And then you can then like address the remains of her. So it's kind of like, okay, well, there's, you know, a dog body parts here, and then there's a dog core, and I'm like, what is the dog core? And it's like, oh fuck, Bilbo's eating Minnie. He's eating the remains of this other dog, which affects his genetic biome or DNA, which then has ramifications for breeding. It's like, what? Oh shit. So it's like, do I let the dog like eat the other dead dog, or do I clean up the dead dog, or do I put the dead dog in storage? And then there's like there's a core of the dead dog, which you can then turn into a monument. You can turn it into a gravestone, or you can save it, or you can crack it open and feed the inside of it to other dog. Like,
okay, you blew my mind so hard that I'm like,
that's just one example of the like, what? Like, I don't know what this game is. What the fuck is happening? Like,
I'm speechless.
That's
literally
it.
Speechless.
So like, if any of this weird, bizarre mystery, it's like it's a sandbox mystery mechanic game that reveals itself to you very slowly over time in a total what WTF way. If that appeals to you, then I do recommend it. We're having fun with it and we're enjoying the exploration of like, how weird does this actually get? And is the point of this?
I am going to wager that is pretty fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And the best part is like, my daughter and I like talking about it. I'm like, oh yeah, did your dog like lay another egg? And my wife is just like passing by in the kitchen being like, what the fuck are you talking about?
What the fuck are they talking about? What is happening?
And normally the like janky, buggy, crappy performance of the Switch version would be an immediate deal breaker for me. But it's so bizarre, and that I just like having it on handheld and just sitting next to my daughter being like, What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, that if that's not a bonding experience, I really don't know what else would be. It's like, well, Father, this is happening, and no one understands.
I'm in the Discord too, and here's the reason this game is so appealing to me is like you look at the community around it, and you look at the Discord or the subreddit, and it's just people being like, look at this fucked up dog I made. And it's so different and weird looking from the default ones that you start out with that you're like, yeah, I would like to figure out how the hell people are making these monstrosities. You can, you know like a hamster cage where it's like over here is like the little burrow and then over you can go through a tube and then over here is another room of your hamster palace. Like that is what you are slowly building and unlocking. And I'm really not sure how the dogs get from one place to another, but you can kind of add rooms and pipes and furniture. Animal Crossing meets Nintendogs meets Spore meets like the jankiest 90s, whatever 3D polygonal thing you could imagine. It's very great and weird. I don't know what else to say about it.
I have nothing else I could possibly say. I am that floored by what you just told me.
Does any of this, like, is this like a, oh yeah, I'll listen about it and look at it on YouTube? Or are you like, I gotta get this?
I feel like I have to talk to my husband because point, I'm just like, what?
You need to be grounded.
What is happening? Like, I need to talk to someone, no offense, other than you.
Yes,
so I'm like, okay, so I talked to Matt about this and I don't even know. And like, I feel like if he's like, okay, my brain just exploded and I'm going to need to. Yeah, I'm gonna need to see what this is about. Then I'd be like, yeah, like
let's do this.
Yeah, like I'm just like, I don't even know what to do with that information. I think that like all of it was like, yeah, okay, I'm with, okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds, wow, I'm really impressed with that. And then I think where you were like, okay, so then the dog dies, and I was like, wait, what?
Here's what I'm saying. If this Thanksgiving you would like to feed a dog its own poop and then put it in a cocoon so it will turn into another dog, then get fucking Wobble Dogs, okay?
I feel like I'm about to literally pee myself.
That's it. All right, we cannot do better than that. Thank you so much for listening. Happy holidays if you celebrate in the U.S. Or wherever you might be. We hope you had a wonderful gaming time and some wonderful friends and or family time this week. Final words, Colette. Have you peed? Have you peed your pants?
No, I haven't, but I'm close. We need to go.
All right, we're out of here. Goodbye, stay safe, and we'll talk at you next week.